Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure, as always, continuing to celebrate Small Business Week. We're going to do that with our good friend Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim joins us from time to time to talk to us about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. He's our good friend, Jim Ostroff. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, everyone.
It's good to have you back, and happy Small Business Week.
Yes, yes. Let us all celebrate something that is and remember something very important, that small business contributes mightily to our economy and our lifestyle.
Well, I like to point out that the Kiplinger folks, the Kiplinger Company, is a small business.
Yes, it is. Indeed,
it's a family-owned third-generation small business. It's not a tiny small business.
No.
It's not a little one like mine, but it's you guys got a couple hundred employees, but that's a small business.
Yeah, and within our sector, within the sector, we're fairly small. But as the Kiplingers say, we like it that way.
I like it that way, too. Hey, Jim, one of the things you guys report this week on page one is some of the stuff that's going on with the banking sector. The banking sector it continues to get some bad news in terms of capitalization, but it seems to be clawing its way back. What do you think?
Well, it is true. We see more than green sprouts. We see recovery at hand.
Can I stop you for 1 second, folks?
Yeah.
And I think, Jim, it's important that we differentiate the big banks from the little banks.
Oh, absolutely.
It's in fairness to the little banks,
right,
who most of whom did not become part of the subprime nonsense. They stayed right there on Main Street. They kept doing their business, stuck to their knitting. They're still solid. They're still making small business loans. They're still serving their communities. They have not taken any of the TARP money. Most of them haven't. The vast majority haven't. And so I do think it's important that when we talk about what Jim and I are talking about now with the banking industry, we're talking about primarily the 19 big ones. Go ahead, Jim.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, investors aren't really smashing down share prices of these publicly held large banks. The government did these stress tests, and it showed they had problems, but by and large, most were okay. And
approximately half of the companies that took the stress test failed the stress test.
Let me see. Nine out of ten or half?
I thought it was about half that failed it, and didn't they?
Not sure.
I could be. I think that's about right. Now I don't know how they failed. I don't know if they made a 59 instead of a 60, or if they did a 33. You know, I'm trying to remember some of my test grades in school, some of them. I think it was about 50-50.
Well, I gotta say the thing here is, I think the big focus was on the big and giant ones.
Yeah,
like Goldman
the big
Sachs,
ones.
Right,
yep.
The Goldman Sachs and others. And, the thing is, there was concern that they were just going to go down the tubes and bringing the economy down, perhaps again, requiring more bailout money. Well, those big banks are still here. And even now we have Goldman Sachs and some others looking to repay the government early, for the rescue.
Well, here's what's kind of interesting to me, Jim. They visited the government's influence on them by their behavior.
That's right.
And as a result of their meltdown, they basically needed the government to come in and bail them out. And now that they've got them there, you know, it's like inviting somebody to your party and finding out that the guy doesn't bathe. You know, I don't want, we want this guy out of here, you know. So
they're saying,
you know what, we want to pay you back your money.
Yeah, and no, absolutely. You know, it comes with many strings. And it's more than just having a situation where you say, okay, well, look, you know, we have daily oversight of operations. No, no, no. There is this pervasive influence, in short, of the government sort of directing what you can do and can't do. So
right. They
have some option. They want Uncle Sam to leave now.
Well, and here's what's funny, though, Jim, is that the government says, wait a minute, not so fast. Not so fast. They actually have not only put strings on them for having their money, the government's money in there, they're putting strings on whether they can give the money back or not.
Yes. And again, that's the concern, of course, big concern there, as well as it should separately in the auto sector, after all is said and done, you know, will your favorite uncle at the end decide he's going to come and live with you?
and I think this is a cautionary tale, Jim, for all the other proposals that are out there right now, like the cap and trade bill, like the health care bill, those two primarily. You know, a lot of people want the government to take over those two areas. Well, let's look at the automobile industry. Let's look at the banking industry. I wonder if those folks had a choice, if they wouldn't have said, you know what, if we had a choice, we'd rather not have the government be in our business.
And
in the two areas I just mentioned, healthcare and the cap and trade, carbon emissions issue. We currently do have a choice now. We can stop the government from sticking its nose under our tent.
At least there is conceptually a choice.
It can be done. There's no automatic. The world isn't going to collapse if the government doesn't get involved in those areas, like we thought it was going to with the banking situation.
It's not on autopilot. It's not inevitable, and there just are, as there should be. I'm saying that there are concerns about the future and to what extent you want any government entity involved in your business.
Right.
So
that's exactly right. One of the things that you guys point out in the letter is, in the good news is, the banks are actually able to raise capital in the marketplace right now.
They are, and that is good news.
A few months ago, they couldn't, and now they can, and that's, I mean, I think some of them raised a bunch of money this week. So that's good news for the banking sector. We need to get these guys back in business, lending money at the top level. That's a big part of capitalism, of the strength and the future of capitalism in America. 20 after the hour. Stay with me. I'll be right back. That's Christy McVay, ladies and gentlemen, the voice, one of the voices of Fleetwood Mac, and outstanding, one of the great American bands. But I say American band, actually about half the band is, a little more than half the band is English, but they primarily did a lot of their work in the United States, and still rocking out there after all these years. 23 after the hour, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for checking it out and checking out our blog while you're there, my knowledge base, where you get small business answers now. You can subscribe to my free newsletter. We'll send it to you every Sunday afternoon by email. We'll get you ready for the week ahead. You can check out the archives, the articles. Whenever we do an interview, it's available by archive all by itself, just that interview. No commercials in about an hour or so after we go off the air, so check those things out. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blassingame. Jim Ostroff is our guest, our good friend, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, we're still talking about banking. This the front page cover story of your most recent Kiplinger letter. And there are a couple of other shoes waiting to drop on the banking industry, Jim, that we need to talk about. One of them you report on the front page. I don't think the second one you did, but the first one is one that you didn't, at least not in this particular piece, is the credit card thing. I mean, there are billions of dollars of credit cards debt out there, much of it being held by people who are now unemployed and or whose work has been cut back or they're, or whatever, you know, they're in some kind of financial strain. And there could be, I mean, there's a real shoe waiting to drop out there in the credit card, isn't there?
There is. You know, we have, I mean, I don't know how many scores of billions, or it might be hundreds of billions. I believe.
I knew the number at one time, but I've forgotten.
Yeah, but a real head-turning number out there of debt that likely will have to be written off. It's no good. It will never be repaid. And that will have to be addressed in the months ahead. Maybe individuals can invite the government into their homes. And no, but that's not going to happen. One way or other, they're going to have to companies wipe out this debt somehow. And I should say, actually, this week we will report about this new credit card bill that will affect some of this. Although not, but the bigger issue of bad debt looms. Like at least a 700-pound gorilla right now.
Right, no question about it. It's huge, and then the commercial real estate, Jim, well, is another shoe waiting to drop.
It is a big one. You know, we focus so much on the housing market collapse and all. Commercial real estate is a problem too. The loans that underpin them are just now beginning to create problems, and it has to be dealt with. So far, it's gotten scant attention, and of course, there are the issues of you're a business of whatever sort, and then you're the owner goes belly up. Then what? So there's a multiplier concern. You may be fine as a small business of any sort, operating in any commercial real estate location. It could be as a tenant or as a retailer. What happens if the people who owe the money on your building or your strip
right.
mall go bust? So there's big concern. Your business is fine, and then you're out on the street.
Well, but the thing is it's not just you, but the thing that I'm concerned about, and this is a real concern, folks, and the reason we're reporting on this is because it has the potential to affect the recovery pace of the economy and whether we get take another hit or not,
yeah.
And that is if there are a lot of commercial real estate defaults, then that's going to set the banks back because they're the big banks are the ones who securitize a lot of those loans. I mean, the vast majority of debt held by on these shopping malls and commercial buildings mm-hmm. are not made by local independent community banks.
No, they're not. They're big ones.
These are global instruments, that aren't they? I mean, these are securitized around the globe.
Mm-hmm. They are. So obviously, we and others are paying a lot of attention to this. What happens if all of that goes bad? You know, and of course, you might think the government recognizes the potential problem. So stay tuned to see what Uncle will do. We don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
I'm looking at one number here, and I don't know if I'm not going to say the number. I found a number I'm not sure it's right. Anyways, I was talking about the credit card amount. We didn't know what that was, but it's a big number. And I don't do we know what the commercial real estate deal is? Is it you're saying that maybe as much as $100 billion? No, that's not right.
Well, what we were saying here, though, is that commercial mortgages account for 23% of the assets of banks of under, $100 billion.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, we just have to try to report what's out there. And the good news is that the credit card and the commercial credit problems are going to come in a an individual shoe dropping. Thank God they didn't all happen last fall. You know, everything happened all at once. 29 after. Stay with us. Jim Ostroff and I will be right back. Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. We're always glad to be hanging out with you here as we. Radio, ladies and gentlemen. You know, it's what keeps you from nodding off in the middle of the day. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'm glad you're here. We got our good buddy Jim Ostroff with the Kiplinger Editors, and Jim is a longtime member of our Brain Trust. And Jim, let's move over and talk about some of the economic issues that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Inventories. You know, I've been getting reports from some of the small business surveys that I've reported on with their authors and promulgators that inventories have been going down, but you're saying you guys report that they still haven't finished liquidating yet.
No, that is correct. More shoes to drop there. Inventories were down $100 billion in the first quarter in terms of products and materials, but I know we have some people who take a good close look at this, and we feel that, you know, companies still have a lot of inventory to use up and burn through this month. I mean, at wholesale, but, you know, we report that the ratio of inventories to sales is down, you know, only a little bit since January, and that is after 7 months of liquidation, and sales have dropped very quickly. So, in short, you know, for the balance of this year, you know, we say that you should look for quarterly cuts of inventories of 50 to up to $80 billion.
But you know, Jim, whether you guys are closer than some of these other things that I've been seeing, these reports, regardless, real soon companies are going to have to start ordering again, or they're not going to have anything on their shelves.
Oh, absolutely. And so really,
if you think about it, if that's what's been going on, if part of the downturn has and part of this negative economy we've had has been because people haven't been ordering goods, they've been sort of living off some of the fat that they had, and not well, by the way. Then this is kind of good news, isn't it? I mean, if you're going to be in business, you got to start ordering. You better start ordering now, and that should foretell a little bit of activity for the recovery.
Oh, it is, and I got to say, in short, that actually, if you're looking in terms of where we are in the business cycle and when these things happen, this is actually sort of a bellwether. It's good news because these steep declines in inventory very often typically come towards the tail end of recessions. In
right.
short, very soon companies are going to have to restock, and that will be one of the, again, bellwethers of our recovery.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you guys also report is that consumer spending hasn't been helped all that much from the tax cuts. Explain what you mean.
Basically it hasn't. There have been an average $10 a week reduction.
Yeah.
That
doesn't make you want to run out and buy a plasma TV, does it?
It doesn't multiply it over hundreds of millions of people. It makes a difference. But that began in March. But it hasn't really unleashed any sort of increased spending. And, of course, really the fact is that people are concerned about even psychology. Am I going to be laid off? Or will a lot more people be laid off? I know people who are. And rising unemployment. So there's just
the unemployment and the
right.
fact that more people are saving. I mean, they get $10, they're putting that in a sock somewhere.
Whatever they are. This is the typical consumer psychology, and it doesn't take any doctor to figure it out. If consumer confidence in the future is sort of lagging, they're going to hold back. If they get some more money, they're going to hold on to it. One good thing is, of course, is the U.S. savings rate has increased sharply.
Right.
And actually, we're at a point, maybe a little bit down the road, the government will be sort of saying, you know, people should be spending more.
Well, you know, I saw something the other day, a report the other day, that, and some commentator made the observation that what we need is America to spend a little, consumers to spend a little less, and we need the world to spend a little bit more.
That would be very helpful.
That'd be an interesting world to live in, wouldn't it? Hold on to that thought, Jim. Jim Ostroff is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He and I will be right back. We come back, I'm going to get him to tell us about something he calls the lipstick index. How about that, folks? That's going to be an interesting thing to hear about. I don't think I know what the lipstick index is. I know my lipstick purchases have dropped off recently. So stay with us. It's 20 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Here's our anthem from Atlanta Rhythm Section. Do it or die, ladies and gentlemen. Small business owners, that's what you do. We're celebrating Small Business Week, continuing to do that. And I think about this song all the time. And you roll the dice, don't you? Every day you roll the dice. You live by your wits. You make payroll on Friday. Sometimes on Monday you don't know how you're going to do that. Is the accounts receivable going to come in? Is that order going to come in? Are you going to get that deposit? You know, what's the next shoe going to drop? It's like that in small business. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not for the squeamish. Being a small business owner is not for the wimpy. It's not for the weak at heart. You got to be strong. You got to be tough. And if it was easy, monkeys would be doing it. So that's the reason why I celebrate small business owners every day, but especially this week during Small Business Week. Jim Ostroff is with us. He's our good friend. He celebrates you too, ladies and gentlemen. I know that he does because I know how he feels about you. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jim, your website, I was there. Let's see, when was I there? It was Tuesday. I was on your website using it, yesterday. Yesterday I was using it and benefited from it. And I encourage you to check it out. Kiplinger.com is an outstanding website. You can find out about their multiple publications, including the flagship letter that Jim and I and Joan and I work off of every week, one or the other of them. It's been around since 1923, and this family-owned business has been doing that every week since then. And then, of course, they got the four biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter, which I still think they should change to alternative fuels letter. But that's just me. And then, of course, they got that magazine thing, Jim. What's the name of that thing?
Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, the first and original and we think the best personal finance magazine.
And still out there on the newsstands, too, isn't it?
It is. And
you can find it there. You can subscribe. How about that phone number?
Yeah, there's a toll-free number. It is 800-544-0155.
So check it out, folks. Don't forget to ask them for that 30-day free trial. Jim, what's the lipstick index?
I'm sorry. Only my hairdresser knows. I can't tell you. Okay. Yeah, just, you know, it's one of the things we look at over here. We've done things on the tablecloth index in the past. But usually, traditionally, during recessions, you'll find consumers actually increasing their sales small.
I've always noticed that about myself.
Yes, I know. Small, affordable luxuries. Things, it might cost me $1 more, but it makes me feel better.
Yes, a new lipstick always makes me feel better, Jim.
It absolutely does. You look marvelous.
Thank you.
So lipstick sales traditionally turn up in a recession, but not this time. excuse me. That they're actually down a bit this year. So who knows?
What about handbags and shoes? Any news on that front?
You know, those are actually on average or total, those are down this year. But even the
handbag. Folks, this is not good with the lipstick. If the lipstick index is down and the handbag index is down, this is not good for the economy, is it, Jim?
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. If people are so concerned that they're even foregoing those,
we only somewhat have our tongue in our cheek, folks, on this one. I mean, this is a real indicator. People have been tracking it, isn't it, Jim?
it, believe me, people look at these as sort of a feel of a leading indicator. However, I should report that mascara sales
are good.
Way
all right, enough of that. I think we milked that one. Hey Jim, what about price levels? One of the problems that small businesses have, every company has, but especially small businesses, is we've been beat down on price for so long now, for months and months, over a year probably now, that you know, we can't return to profitability if we can't get our prices back up.
That is one of the key problems right now. We know small businesses are the engine of this economy, and right now, overall, small businesses and large ones, but small businesses have very little ability to raise their prices. And, you know, we've seen that in the government CPI report for April.
Right.
And even food prices are declining. Gasoline, well, that is seasonal, and there are other factors here.
Gasoline's up right now.
Right now, it's up for various reasons, but
and frighteningly up, actually. I saw like $2.40 yesterday, I think.
Yes,
$2.40 a gallon.
Kipling.
I didn't fly over America.
No, Kipling soon will forecast that run up will plateau and then decline.
Good. I hope you're right about that. And of course, I have no reason to think that you won't be. You almost always are. Hey Jim, let's move down and talk about the auto industry. You guys report that the prices for autos are going to go up. Why?
Basically this. One is that the model that all U.S. automakers, whether they be domestic or foreign, have operated under, require a sales level of 16 to 17 million a year. So like supermarkets, they can sell them low, stack them high, and make profit off of the margins. For various reasons, we're not going to come back to that level again for a number of years.
We're under 10 million right now, aren't we?
And right now, it's 9.5 million. It's the worst since about 1990 or so. So that is a problem. But the other thing over here, basically, is our government, which, as we know, is pushing various emission standards and fuel efficiency standards.
35 miles to the gallon by 2016.
February.
It looks like I'm going to have to drive my SUV for a long time. I won't be able to replace it, Jim, I'm afraid. It's 10 till. Going to be right back with more to come right after these messages with our good friend Jim Ostroff with the Kiplinger Editors.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes.
Little Van Halen, Van Morrison, I should say, ladies and gentlemen.
Neath the cover of a
moon dance.
It
gets better than that. I don't know what it is. Welcome back, 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Jim Ostroff is our guest. I like his name. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and I like him too. Jim, we're talking about the price of automobiles.
Right.
I was telling my wife this week when everyone was predicting that cars would get smaller. We keep reacting to all this stuff, you know. And we had the run up of $4 a gallon on gas earlier last year, and
that's right.
And all of a sudden they started making all these small cars, and next thing you know, gas is down to below $2 a gallon, you know. And why do we knee jerk all this stuff? I don't understand.
Because it's driven by politicians.
Sometimes I really get tired of politics.
Yeah, I know.
Sometimes it's so tedious.
Easy.
It's so small. Politics is so small. There are no big ideas in politics anymore. It's all about there's no shame in politics anymore.
People say many different things even from one day to the next and have no shame.
Unbelievable. And yet these are the people that we ask to run our government.
That's right.
Jim, what's wrong with that picture?
Yeah, well,
Why do we do this?
Yeah, I know.
You know, someone once said, and I agree with him now. It troubled me at the beginning. I heard this the first time. But I think this person was right. I've forgotten who it was. But whoever it was said, we have the government we deserve.
I was going to say, you know.
Do you know who said that? Did you say that, Jim?
Yes, I did. I said that
Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to give him credit for it, at least today.
But we do have
the government we deserve, don't we? We voted these schmucks in
from the top down. We did, and we, by and large, we continue to reelect them all.
Unbelievable.
So,
because I like my schmuck. I don't like your schmuck, but I like my schmuck.
Are we on the air or what?
Yeah.
Anyhow,
schmuck is not a bad word, by the way. I need to get off that soapbox. I just get so disgusted with some of the stuff that they do. And folks, I'm a bipartisan disser here. You know, I mean, yeah. I'm talking. I notice I didn't say anything about any one party.
No, there are people on both sides of the aisle.
It's the political class, Jim. It's a political
class. In the same way, and if say you see, you might say right now, Democrats are in the majority for a while. There, of course, Republicans were, and you see the same thing on both sides.
Same thing, exactly. No question about it. Hey, Jim, let's move over and talk about over on the Justice Department. I'm going to talk about this antitrust thing. The Obama Justice Department is stepping up its antitrust activities. Now, this is an area that is more akin to the Democrats, because the Clinton antitrust division was very active, especially against Microsoft.
That's right.
You remember back in the early part of this decade, and so now they're talking about kicking it off again. And there's some companies out there that are being targeted, you know. And the thing is to me, the antitrust division, the antitrust activity, is becoming a little bit unnecessary because technology goes right. Whatever the antitrust people are upset about today, before they can mount the antitrust lawsuit. Technology has changed everything around.
And I we probably both well remember the antitrust case filed at the end of Johnson administration's very last days, 69 against IBM, whatever. And by the time
lasted
that
13
thing was,
years.
Right. That was resolved, it was a non-issue.
Yeah.
Technology and companies had changed to a point that, you know, IBM was not out to control the world.
But in the meantime, it harmed a company that was trying to grow jobs. And it was strictly because the government, you know, got stuck its nose in there.
Yeah, and I should say, over here, they're looking now in their sights with IBM again, but Google and Dell and Intel and Verizon and, you know, and Alcatel-Lucent, and goes on and on. The thought here is that this administration is looking to adopt more of a European Union approach to antitrust.
God help us.
And we saw that just the other day with a huge fine against Intel.
Yep. From the EU.
Even though Intel has nowhere near a majority thing, it's basically saying, we're doing this just to make sure you don't get any bigger at all.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to make these governments smaller. If we don't, we're going to wind up with all government all the time. And I don't think any of us are going to like what that looks like. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you all.
Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. Happy Small Business Week.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.